Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Hua Bui and I'm your chair for this session, which is Life Cycle Planning Towards a Better Financial Calculator. The authors are Anthony Escher and Gary Kemker. Dr. Anthony Escher is Associate Professor at University of New South Wales. He teaches Part 2 and Part 3, Control Cycle and Risk Management courses. The three major themes of his current research are the development of a family financial planning calculator that he will be presenting today. He's also convened the Actuaries Institute Retirement Income Working Group that is undertaking research into annuity design, the spending patterns of retirees, and investment advice. And the third area is business ethics, with a focus on educating and encouraging virtues. He has written a book, Working Ethically in Finance, Clarifying Your Vocation. He recommends that you read it. Actually, Chris White recommends that you read it. Dr. Gary Kemker is the second presenter. He's an associate and assistant professor of actuarial science at Bond University, where he lectures Part 2 courses and is instrumental in the creation of the actuarial science program there. His research interests span retirement planning and superannuation, long-term care insurance product, disability income insurance, and personal finance. He's also part of the Actuaries Institute Exemption Committee. Before I ask the two authors to come and present, the format of the session is that it will be for 50 minutes. The presenters will speak for about 40 minutes. Dr. Anthony Escher, I believe, will speak first, followed by Dr. Gary Kemker. At question time, can I ask that you use the microphone and also state your name before you speak? All sessions are recorded. So without any further ado, can I ask Anthony Escher to come and start the presentation?
Thanks very much, Hoa. thank you for coming and listening. Let me get straight on to our... That's not going to work. No. Okay.
We'll do a...
No. Frozen. All right. Okay, well, while we're waiting for something to happen on that score, let me just tell you, the project that we're dealing here, the financial planning calculator, Gary and I are two of the investigators. Adam Butt, who you will know from ANU, and Professor Ujwal Kayende, who's a marketing professor at Melbourne. And our intention is to work on developing a calculator that sort of sets... Well, Gary, in one of the articles, he sort of gave the gold standard. I think if we get to the silver standard, we'll be doing quite well. But we're looking at a long-term project that is attempting to to develop a calculator with a degree of sophistication that really meets the needs of people out there. I think one of the advantages we have as academics is that we don't have to deliver. I don't have to deliver low-hanging fruit. And it's quite possible there are no low-hanging fruit in this area. So we're looking at a five-year... Oh, thanks very much. We're looking at a five-year project, of which we're in our 18th month or something. I don't have a triangle with Alicia's... but we're sort of going to go in that direction. So there are two elements to this project. The first is to how best to encourage engagement... understanding and engagement, and the second thing is to understand risk preferences. Now, what I'm going to show you now, I'm not at all convinced that it's going to be understandable by more than 20% of the population, but, you know, that's 4 million people, so it's a reasonably significant part of the financial advisors we've spoken to call them the engineers, but it's accountants, engineers, actuaries who might actually be able to understand graphs. And the second question is to understand risk preferences, to really what is the underlying utility function that people have. And I think a lot of the work that we've done just does not think about utility functions, about underlying risk preferences in a logical fashion. A utility function is a logical, coherent way of formulating one's risk functions, one's risk preferences. And the assumptions that existing calculators bring to those risk to the calculations and the recommendations are very often not adequately thought out. So the leisure that we have as academics to think about these things in the long term is what we're doing here. So what is the objective of family financial planning? So it's the question of save enough to maintain a consistent quality of life before and after retirement. So the two need to be considered together, which is seldom done in existing calculators. We need to take family structure, schooling and housing costs into account because they are often as important as super. We need to talk about life insurance, and that can only come from once you know what the income is that you're going to be replacing. And we need an investment and spending strategy with an acceptable trade-off for risk and, as I say, engagement. So now let's try this one. And why is it? It worked beforehand. Oh, thank you. All right. So here's our calculator. To get into it, you would come to the website draftfinplancalc.com. If you go onto it on your phone, you'll get the first page, but the second page doesn't work so well, so I wouldn't bother. You do need a full browser. We're not going to be launching it in any huge way until next week, but you're welcome to go on and be a bit of a guinea pig this week to see to see the many teething problems that one can have when one launches. I must say, just the site has been developed by Cliff Sinkbol, who runs Grifby consultancy in Hobart. He's just driven from Kettering to Hobart to make sure that this thing worked, because it didn't work at lunchtime. So thank you very much, Cliff. So there's the first data, very short, your story: age, partner, children, home, and salaries. The idea is that we understood that every time you ask people to look at a page and move on, you lose about 5% of your people, so we wanted to get as much information on that first page as possible and then get them straight on to some actual action. Now, this was originally designed by my sons, which I'm proud to say. So I designed a calculator for them because they're in their 20s and have children and other things that they need to do. So Robert, who's the architect, and Michael, who's the programmer, have done this. And their idea, so we've got your salary, retirement age at 65. We might want to retire a little bit later, and we might want to give yourself a promotion, and we might want to slide down so that you're retiring part-time. So we reckon that was pretty engaging. Now, when I do that with my students, they go, ooh, ah. So you... Thank you. All right, so you can do the same for your spouse, and if you're going to be, you can take some time off, and now you can just add a child and perhaps get a time there. And while you do, and in doing that, what comes up on this side, the calculation results, your income, your assets, your super, and then we show separately, there's the age pension here. You've got rent across the board now because we're not buying a house, and we've got the little red, the school fees and the childcare. So we're showing it all there, and we're doing the calculation automatically. Is going to come up with a number. Oh dear, what does that mean? All right, I'll show you just now.
You need more income.
So you need more income. Well, okay, you don't have sufficient income to fund these. And what you can't see here is a little bit of yellow here, which is a liability, because you've now got children, you can't afford it. So you need more income here. No, even more.
No.
Anyway. All right, so what you do is end up playing with that in terms of, I think it's still there. I can't.
Yeah, up at the top.
Up at the top?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, this is the income. There we go.
Change towards the end.
Right. Now the calculator then, there we are. So it was inadequate income that you were earning. You have to. Now, One of the issues here is that for a level spending throughout retirement, throughout life, inevitably you do not, those warnings come up. You do not have enough money. And this is the major argument, I think, against increasing the super guarantee to beyond 9%. It already is much too high for younger people. Play around with it and see whether you agree with me. So our calculations work out that you can spend $66,000 this year and your contributions to super should be $18,000 together. We've got here, all right, then we've got a few other things. We need to have a house. You can add a house whenever you like. You can't do it then because you run out of money when before the kids leave home. Anyway, you can do that. We've got rent. You've got the amount that you will spend on the house. We've got your super details. We've got your other assets and liabilities. And we have here the amount that you want to leave as a bequest or as a buffer. So my view at this stage is that the bequest motive is, I think one's got to be quite psychological about this. I don't think many people actually have a bequest motive. If they do, they set up a trust and make sure the money lasts. I think for most people, they have a bequest motive because it's a quite good post hoc rationalization for the fact that they want a buffer. And to have a buffer is quite good. You can promise it to all of your children in the whole, you know, you can promise it three times to the cousin. I'm that's not entirely in jest because I certainly have had relatives that have done that. But, you know, I think there's quite a lot of psychology to this issue which needs to be investigated. But at this point, all we're saying is here's the money for either a bequest or for a target. And this then calculates the life insurance for you and your spouse based on your contribution to the family, to the household, and your personal costs. Clearly, we might debate the actual amounts. I mean, we perhaps sort of round it from 1,137,292 to perhaps 1.1 million, but the idea is there. And that until you actually know what your retirement date is, you actually don't really know how much insurance you need. So this hopefully will have changed if we get down. It has dropped a little because now you're retiring earlier. So that's the standard actuarial control cycle valuation. So here's the number. We expect people to put their actual experience in over time, and it'll give them an indication of how much they should be spending if things work out smoothly. Now, obviously, they don't. So the next question is, how are we going to give advice? How are we going to elicit their risk preferences through the trade-off between investment risk and spending? Now, I think one of the issues that is very often I think it's quite right to talk about, there's no point in investing in a risky investment unless it's going to have a benefit. So I think if you're going to have a risky investment, you want to spend the surplus, and if you're going to spend the surplus, you're going to cut your investments in the event of investments being poor. If you do not want to take that risk, you should take a guaranteed life annuity. But if you're going to take the investment risk, you're going to want to spend the money. Maybe you don't, maybe your children want to, but somehow or other, I think there's got to be some sort of logic on spending the money. So what we've got here is a couple of investment spending strategies. We have not gone for the stochastic approach. Two reasons. The one is any stochastic approach is inevitably based on historical experience. You cannot project the future without interpreting the past. So all your projections of the future are, in fact, interpretations of the past in one way or the other. So why don't we just use the past? And the second advantage of using the past is that it's concrete, and many people have difficulty with abstracts of various sorts, so something concrete would be helpful. Now, this is a suggestion, so we're going to try this. If it doesn't work, there are questionnaires that will come up if you go through this. When you go through the calculator, please answer the questions. You only have to answer them once. Once you've answered them, they disappear. So I've made them disappear on this on this particular version. So we have there the various the various scenarios, and this is on a low-risk scenario. Now we have a slider, basically. He said, okay, there's your proportion in shares, and we then increase the proportion in shares from very little to quite a lot. This based on effectively a... this is using a constant relative risk aversion utility function, as is common in the academic literature. And this is how, based on that, this is how you would spend the money. Now, this is not what you would very often see in papers, because in papers they'll show you the averages. The averages are no help at all, because the averages are always smooth. But every individual's particular trajectory will be rough and different and difficult. So here's what would happen. If you'd been born in 1904, I've actually used the UK stats for the market because I think they're more accurate than the Australian ones. Pre-83, I think before the ASX was founded, I'm not convinced that the Australian market was efficient or accurate, and it has the advantage of giving this huge drop in the UK in the 74. So your income would have been up at 200 and dropped to below 100 on this high risk. And again, this would be born in 1914, this would be maybe an 87 crash. The 70s crash, sorry. So we can make it slightly less less risky, less volatile, and we can do it that way, so that people may choose something along those lines. And then we're going to ask them, we're going to go on to another type of strategy, and this strategy is a set of collars. So it's like a guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit product, but what I've done is I've made the minimum inflation protected, which I think is necessary, and to make it more affordable, I've sold all the upside over 13%. So one produces a collar. So you get returns between 0 and 10 or 13% real. Anything more you lose, and anything below you get protected. That was just an attempt, and there you can have low protection, very volatile smoothing, and you can get some much nicer, smoother results. pre-retirement, this is your retirement date. Pre-retirement, this investment has not proved so great. Post-retirement, I think it looks pretty good. So there is our, that's the calculator. I think that probably will take me back to, I'm not even going to try it. I'll go back to my presentation. What do you do, Gay?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to do that.
What's that?
Oh. So, I've shown you those in real life. We've taken insurance needs into account. We've shown that the... I've mentioned this fact that we've shown the investments and concretely. And I'll pass over to Gary. And actually, how are we going to work at trying to understand the risk preferences?
Before we begin, I have to say that all those red flags that came up in the calculator, which said you don't have enough money, is based on very high assumptions about renting and house prices. You change those and those vanish. So if you go through the entire calculator, it takes you step by step through everything, and you get to change everything, and you essentially should only look at the results after you've gone through all the steps in that front page. So next week onwards, when you log into the calculator, you go through these steps. Towards the end, at some point, it will ask you a command saying, request saying, we would like you to download something. Would you like to download this? I presume is what it's going to say. And what it's going to download is a downloadable animation tool, which links to our server, which is based on the Amazon Web Server, and it will take you through a series of steps, which I'll show you in the graphs, and essentially ask you to choose between different strategies. The choice that you make essentially determines your risk preference. Now, ideally, we don't know what the utility function of the population is. We had to start somewhere, and where we started was the CRRA utility, constant relative risk aversion utility. So this downloadable animation tool assumes you have a CRRA utility function, and we are trying to estimate the CRRA parameter that you might have. And the whole thing is structured in such a way that based on what you have answered on the web page and what you answer on the animation tool, we can determine whether CRRA utility function is a proper utility function or not, i.e. whether what you said on the web calculator and what choices you make, do they marry up or are they inconsistent? And that will help us in future research drive which way should we go. Should we focus on different utility functions, or should we focus on parameterizing one utility function? So the two paths to risk preference, utility elicitation and parameter estimation. In this particular exercise, we are just focused on parameter estimation. However, we have steps in place which will tell us parameter estimation is not the right way to go. We have to go via utility estimation, elicitation. So if you are familiar with the CRRA utility function, CRRA utility function takes the form of consumption to the power of 1 minus rho, where rho is our parameter, risk aversion parameter, divided by 1 minus rho. And we are looking at intertemporal utility. So you are an individual aged X. We want to optimize and maximize your utility for all ages from that age until you die. So what actions should you take that will maximize your utility? And that is captured in future utility. Myself and Adam have a paper. It's published in a very good peer-reviewed journal. And if you want details, either have a look at that paper or send me an email and we can talk about the details. And if you want to replicate it, it is reproducible research as the world is going, so I can give you all the codes if you want to replicate our research. So we have the downloadable animation tool. The first step the animation tool does is gives you a tutorial of how to use the tool, what different options in the tool mean, and it takes about 1 minute to go through that. It is a very involved calculator. Whether it's the right calculator for everybody, we don't know. However, we want to make the calculator as engaging as possible. If you are willing to spend half an hour to an hour of your time, you should be able to use the calculator for your particular situation, your household, in the best possible manner. And then, after it does the tutorial, it provides you a series of charts that asks the user to choose a particular strategy. So this is the first chart that it will show you. It's a bit small. Okay, the first chart provides you three different choices. The purple line, the brown line, and the black line. Each of these strategies are based on a particular risk aversion parameter. The purple line is called strategy 1, the brown line is called strategy 3, and the black line is called strategy 5. It shows you these three graphs. It asks you to choose one of these three strategies. So if we have a look here, we have the level of spending in each year and for the different three different categories, what are the levels? So here you can go up to 240.
Is it 240?
Yep, 240,000 a year in retirement at about age 80. It is to be noted that they all reach their maximum at expected life expectancy. So life expectancy is where the maximum spending, so spending increases until you reach life expectancy and then it starts falling off. How are these graphs created? So these graphs results are based on the paper by Butt and Kemka 2015, and these were run over different parameters. So that strategy produced the optimal allocations in asset, optimal asset allocations and optimal consumption strategy based on your super balance at each age in your life. Overlaid on that are the government rules about how much you can put in super and how much you can, all the withdrawal rules after age 65. So 4% between 65 and 70, 5% increasing by 1% every so many years. So all those rules are overlaid. Here in this particular example, the salary is assumed to be fixed at $72,000. Why $72,000? The paper was written back in 2013, where the average income was $65,000. Add 9% super to it, we come to about $72,000. So that's taken as the benchmark of this particular scenario. However, when you use the calculator, it will take the inputs that you put in the calculator as the baseline to generate this graph. So everything is interlinked with each other. Whatever income you put in, that will be used to generate these graphs for you. So for each strategy, we have a good strategy and a bad strategy, or a good scenario and a bad scenario. How good scenario is essentially a particular market choices which are almost always favorable to you. And a bad scenario is what happens if you have a series of poor returns towards the beginning and you essentially are exposed to very high sequencing risk. The good scenario comes from somewhere between the top seven. So we run 10,000 simulations based on our data, and between the top 75 to 90 percentile, we choose the good scenario, and the poor scenario is chosen from the 25 to 10 percentile of the outcomes. So they're not the worst and the best outcomes. Now, say if you choose strategy 1. Strategy 1 assumes a CRRA parameter of 2. Strategy 3 assumes a CRRA parameter of 5. And strategy 5 assumes a CRRA parameter of 8. Literature states that most of the population is somewhere between 4 and 6. So strategy 1 is very risky. Strategy 5 is very, very risk averse. And strategy 3 is about the right strategy. So say for some reason you are really seduced by this high income and you're highly optimistic and disregard this part completely. Note that when you are in the bad scenario, you are relying a lot on the age pension. The age pension, this area here is essentially the age pension only. So if strategy 1 is chosen, you are then given a choice between strategy 1 and strategy 2. Strategy 2 refers to CRRA parameter of 4, which is more representative of the population. And you are asked to make a decision based on these graphs. Which of these two strategies represent your risk preference? Would you go with a very high risk strategy one, or the more moderate risky, more moderate strategy two? Strategy two, as we notice, generally gives you better outcomes in the low side than strategy one. However, the upside is capped. The reason why the upside is capped is you invest a lot less in risky assets in the future compared to strategy one. Strategy one, even at the time of, even at age 110, you're investing at about, age 105, you're investing at about 95% equity market. Strategy two, which is CRRF4, you're investing at about 40% constant from retirement. So post-retirement, your equity market investment is constant at 40%. You do not change it. Whatever is your portfolio size, you invest 40% in the equity markets from the time of retirement. Where does this come from? This comes from the basic economic theories of Samuelson and others who created the utility paradigm, which stated that you're more risky while you have a bond-like, when your bond-like future income earning capacity is at its maximum. And the lower your bond-like future income earning capacity is, the more risk-averse you are. And that's why when you're younger, you're 100% invested in equities, and when you're older, you reduce your risk. And this is where the entire commentary in personal finance columns says you should be very risky at lower younger ages and more risk-averse at older ages. This is the basis where they get their arguments from. Now, instead of choosing strategy one, if you had chosen strategy two, you'd be given three options. Strategy three, you'd be given three options. Strategy two, three, and four. CRRA parameter four, five, and six, which is the most representative choice set of the population. Research says five is the most optimal one, but we have provided all the three, and essentially you have to choose which one you go for. So at younger ages, you obviously do better during with a more riskier strategy. At older ages, you do better with less riskier strategies. And finally, you have, if you choose strategy five, you're given strategy four and five. Strategy five, which is CRRA parameter of eight, assumes you hardly invest in risky assets at any given point. Now, there's a trade-off. If you invest in risky assets, you can afford to consume more today, because you are assuming that on average in the long term you will earn certain investment return. However, if you're not investing in risky assets, you need to save a lot more today for the same returns, for the same spending capacity later on. Strategy 8, even at age 25, gives you about 30% investment risky asset allocation. That's a very low risky asset allocation. And since that is the case, at lower ages, you are maximizing your cap. Here, the cap comes in at about 35,000, 38,000, which says you consume that much and the rest you're putting in super at very lower ages. It's probably not representative, but for completeness, we have provided this strategy. So these are the three graphs in the downloadable animation tool, and once you go through these, eventually you'll be asked to make a choice of one of these strategies, which will be recorded with your session. And in the which will be recorded in the background at Amazon Web Server. It is completely de-identified. You don't have to provide any personal identifying information. We had a bit of a debate as to shall we ask for email addresses and send this downloadable tool as an email attachment, or we decided to make it completely de-identified and you're not providing any identifying information. There is a cookie that gets stored in your computer, which depending on whether it's a private computer or there are a couple of questions you are asked in the very beginning, determines the expiry time of that cookie. The cookie will expire within 6 months by itself, unless you state it's a private, a public computer, in which case it will expire in 15 minutes. So next, we'll record these responses, and the more users that use them, the better understanding we'll have as to which way our research should go for. Should we go for utility elicitation or only parameter estimation? And we will take all these responses and obviously analyze them and publish them, and we will be back here providing us the results next year. As we were last year saying that this will happen next year. All right, that's it from me. And if you have any questions, the floor is open for questions.
Thank you, Gary. That was right on cue. we've got about 12 minutes left for questions, so please, all the burning questions that you have and you've been holding off from asking Anthony and Gary, now you can let go and rush to the microphone. please use the microphone and state your name so we know who the context of who's speaking.
Anthony David Rush. I wanted to return the compliment because you asked a question in my session, so I thought I'd ask a question in yours. How did you actually go about working out the needs in retirement? How did you work out what you needed to calculate or what you needed to accumulate in your lifetime to meet those needs? How did you work out what you need to accumulate?
Okay. Thanks, David. So it's, as you know, it can't be done analytically. It's got to be done by simulation, which is one of the things we're a little proud of in the calculator. So basically, we take your income, which is given. We take your children's expenses and, your set expenses, the children's expenses and the house expenses, if they're there. We project them through to retirement based on one consumption level. I don't know where we started. And then we basically iterate until we have a level consumption through your life that exhausts your spare cash by the end. So if you, let's see if I get back there. So if you, we ask you how much your buffer is and how much you want to leave to your beneficiaries, and based on that, we then calculate an amount that exhausts your super and all your other assets at that point. So it's an iterative process. It's done on the computer, and it actually happens pretty quickly, as you can see, which was rather edifying when we got it right. And I think that's what existing calculators don't do, and I do think we would like to see, I would like to suggest that that should be the starting point of what we recommend people save. This is not doing well. Talk about distracting people. So here we've got the situation of how much the net asset, your net asset target. So that's how much you want to leave to your set bequest to children, in addition to the home or money for a rainy day. So, okay, I hope that answers the question. And sorry, I would like to, we will have another item that basically allows you to reduce your spending after retirement to a fixed percentage of your pre-retirement income, or vice versa, just to allow a little bit more flexibility. But that's coming.
Frank Ash, I commend you for that calculator looks very interesting and so forth. This is actually a pretty much a golden age for these sorts of calculators because there's a lot of, well, a lot. There's a few fintech companies looking at this sort of area, and we're all looking at calculators that like that do something like this, and it's gratifying to see that at least a number of the assumptions that we're doing, for example, CRRA as a natural process to use, is actually there. Are you looking at any sort of commercial process for this, or this is purely academic?
When we started back 18 months ago, the first question was asked is, do you want to make money out of this? And we decided no.
Yep. Okay. That's fine. Because I did that as well years and years ago. Those charts, I've got a PhD in this area and I'm on a fintech company that's working in this area and I couldn't understand your charts, at least those last ones where I'm choosing between strategy 2 and strategy 3. So that's just some very quick feedback there that I'm sort of at the top end of the audience that you'd be trying to get to. And those charts lost me. So
personally, I'm not a fan of those charts. However, in the next iteration, all of that will be incorporated in one place. What happened, it's probably our fault, is that we went through a couple of iterations where this entire web-based approach came in later and the chart bit was there before.
The charts were developed by James Maitland. It's developing a fairly standard approach to utility elicitation. We did take a number of financial planners through them at a relatively slow speed, and they found them comprehensible. So I think we'll find out. But the whole point of this exercise is to say, well, let's try hard to set the bar as high as possible, and then we'll weed out the PhDs along the way.
Richard Lyon, following on, as it happens, from Frank's question, if I understand correctly, what you hope to learn next is how typical users are going to describe their world to you, and from that learn what you need to reflect back to them. And so my question is very simple. You clearly therefore want your sample audience to be typical. Why are you directing all of us to the website?
You are only one group of them. We are in the process of publishing this in the major newspapers, so we have a publicity article, and which will go live the day the calculator goes live.
David Schneider. I love the user interface. I think it's looking really good, and the speed, obviously, I think is quite impressive. If I understood correctly, you were talking about one investment strategy that involved a zero premium collar, where your equity returns were capped between 0 and 13%. My personal view is it's not required. It's such an interesting tool. And the danger is that volatility is obviously non-stationary. It's very hard to get historic data on volatility or the skew. And, in fact, if you actually run the historic data, you even get occasions very rarely where the puts and calls strikes actually flip over because of the skew and the difficulty of getting that kind of historic data. I don't think it's necessary for the calculator. It's just an observation.
Thank you, Dave.
Daniel Stone from TAL. I found that final graph nearly impossible to comprehend. And I, when I looked at it, I said, well, clearly strategy one is the best. You get the highest amount of spending. But it just didn't seem intuitive. I was thinking to find out, would it not be better to use some sort of psychographic profiling using typical tools? I don't know if these are appropriate for this, but I kind of Hagen and Myers-Briggs and multiple other more psychographic questions that truly look into your risk aversion using more psychological effects. You know, even on Facebook, you have a test your IQ, you press a button on these pictures, that it really could tell a lot about people. What do you prefer, this over this, this over this, this over this? And eventually that should, in my opinion, come out with a much better proxy for your true risk aversion and investment strategy, not that. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. The literature tends to suggest that your psychological profiles are very, I mean, Myers-Briggs is very fluid over your lifetime. And the question is really is how does that translate into real life situations? So one of the criticisms of a lot of the risk aversion questionnaires is that they ask you, you know, would you prepare to bet $50 here or risk for $100 there? And that's just totally out of context. I think what we're trying to do is to contextualize the issue right into where it makes the difference. And the difference is that it makes a difference on their spending power. Now, I would like to suggest that we will get a better response from some lay people than from actuaries, because I'm sorry if I might suggest, be bold enough to suggest that some of you are captured in a paradigm that doesn't consider this question. There's a challenge to you. I think the situation, longevity, investment returns, Superfund costs on under the hood. If you want to drive a car, if you think of the car terms, what we want to do is to control the steering and the brake and the accelerator, the spending and the investment strategy. Those are the two things that need to be looked at. And I think we need to direct the user's attention to those two items and to nothing else. Sorry, Frank.
If I may add, the third thing that you have control over is when you retire. So there are only three things you can control: how much you consume, what your asset allocation is, and when you retire. What the market does is beyond your control. If you spend your time thinking about it, it's your choice.
It's the end of the session, so I'd like you to join me in thanking Dr. Asher and Dr. Kamka for their very entertaining and informative presentation.